Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. St. George, Utah is a city of nearly 100,000, nestled in the southwesternmost corner of Utah and less than 2 hours away from the flashing lights and liveliness of Las Vegas. In 2015, St. George became the new home of the Smith family. Having raised their 6 children in Canada, Tracy and Darren Smith were inching closer and closer to having an empty nest. By 2015, 5 of their 6 children had moved out and started lives of their own. Only the youngest, 17-year-old Mason, still lived at home. In April 2015, at the end of Mason's junior year in high school, he moved from Canada to St. George, Utah with his mother, Tracy. His father, Darren, would be joining them a few months later. He was busy working out of town on several construction projects. Tracy had chosen St. George for a couple of reasons. One was for a new job opportunity, but another was for its sunny weather and close proximity to places such as Zion National Park and the Grand Canyon. According to Tracy, she realized at some point that she struggled with seasonal depression, and she wanted to live somewhere that was warm and bright. She and Mason loved the outdoors. They loved being able to soak up the sunshine and the fresh air. But there was another reason that sunshine and nature were so important to Tracy when choosing their new home. In the months leading up to the big move, Mason had become increasingly withdrawn and melancholy, but this wasn't a sudden or abrupt change in his personality. Mason had struggled with depression since middle school. When he was very young, his parents realized that there was a delay in Mason's speech, and he had a lot of difficulty speaking and communicating like other kids his age. After having him evaluated, Mason was diagnosed with aphasia. Aphasia itself is actually a symptom of something else, specifically damage to the portion of the brain that controls language and communication. It can also occur after a neurological emergency, such as a stroke. There aren't any further details about what specifically could have caused Mason's aphasia. With a lot of practice and a few years of speech therapy, Mason's speech improved tremendously. But he did still have a distinctive way of speaking, and he did occasionally still have trouble getting certain words out or getting his point across. One of Mason's sisters has described his speech pattern as sounding somewhat slurred. By the time he started middle school, other kids had taken to pointing out Mason's speech difficulty. He was targeted and bullied heavily for the way that he spoke. And this certainly played a role in shaping Mason's personality and the way that he interacted with other people. He was incredibly reserved and quiet, preferring to keep to himself. Social anxiety was a daily struggle for Mason. I can say from experience that while middle and high school can be nerve-wracking and overwhelming for any teenager, that increases tremendously for a teenager who has social anxiety. Making friends can seem near impossible when it's quite literally frightening to talk to a new person, and even things as mundane as presenting a project in front of your classmates will have you worried sick and unable to sleep for the entire week leading up to it. When Mason was 15 years old, in December 2013, his struggle with depression reached a breaking point. He attempted to end his own life, and he was hospitalized for about a week afterwards. While depression never just goes away, Mason's mental health did seem to improve over time. When he made the move from Canada to St. George, Utah, he was still navigating how to cope with his depression, but his family did notice that his mental health improved drastically. He was excited about their new home, and probably becoming excited about his future as well, as he had just started his senior year of high school and he was about to be turning 18. Because Mason was introverted and a bit of a homebody, he found his hobbies and passions in the comfort of his own home. He loved escaping into video games, and he spent much of his free time watching anime. Mason also had dreams of becoming a musician, and he was a talented songwriter. As many of us probably know, our parents often don't understand some of the things we may enjoy. I'm 26, and my family still doesn't quite get my love for K-pop. But Mason's parents thought that, though they weren't thrilled about how much time he spent in his room playing video games or watching anime, it could be a good tool to ensure Mason kept his grades up. So Mason's parents made him a deal. If he maintained good grades in school, he would be allowed to watch anime during the school week, instead of only on the weekend. On August 31st, 2015, just a couple of weeks into Mason's senior year of high school, he texted his mom on his way home from school, excited about how good his grades were. He even texted her a screenshot of his grading report. He was thrilled that he would be able to go home and settle down to watch his favorite anime. 3 days earlier, on August 28th, Mason's father, Darren, returned home from Salt Lake City to join Mason and Tracy in their new home. When Mason got home from school around 3:30 p.m. on August 31st, he went to his room as he normally did and settled down with his laptop. Soon after, Darren knocked on Mason's door. Mason's parents had become increasingly concerned about their son's introverted tendencies. They consistently tried to encourage Mason to be more social, attend more events with his peers, get a job, and they especially wanted him to learn how to drive so that he could become more independent. That day, Darren had planned to take Mason out for driving practice, but when he went to his son's room, Mason was adamant that he had a headache and wanted to reschedule. Mason had been open about the fact that he was nervous to drive, and this is not uncommon. Driving can be terrifying, and I 100% relate to Mason's fears about getting behind the wheel. I was so scared of driving as a teenager that I didn't get my license until I was 25 years old, and before I got my license, I had only practiced driving a handful of times. With Mason's social anxiety, having a fear of driving and being pushed toward it must have been overwhelming for him, on top of everything else he was trying to cope with. To Darren's frustration, he and Mason rescheduled their driving practice. Around 8:30 that evening, Tracy got home from work and she went to check on Mason in his room. All of the lights were out and Mason was lying in his bed. Tracy was worried about him, but he told her that he just had a headache and wanted to get some rest. Tracy and Darren enforced a pretty strict curfew of 10 p.m. for Mason during the school week. At 10 o'clock every night, all of his electronics had to be off. Because they'd had trouble getting Mason to adhere to the curfew, Tracy would unplug the internet every night and hide the cords. That night, she did unplug the internet at 10 p.m., but she was exhausted from work and didn't think much about hiding the cords. She and Darren then went to bed for the night. Around 1:30 a.m., Darren woke up and went to check on things around the house. When he left his bedroom, he saw a light shining under Mason's bedroom door. Mason had plugged the internet router back in, and he was up late on his laptop, watching anime. Before going back to bed, Darren asked Mason to hand over his laptop and cell phone. Mason was undoubtedly frustrated about it, but he gave both of his devices to his dad without argument. Darren took the laptop and phone back to his room with him when he went to bed. Later that morning, September 1st, 2015, around 7 a.m., Darren woke up and went to knock on Mason's bedroom door to make sure he was up for school. When he heard Mason say yep through the door, he went back to bed for a while. Tracy and Darren said that around 7:30 a.m., they could hear Mason in the kitchen shuffling around, possibly finding something to eat for breakfast. A few minutes later, around 7:40 a.m., they said that they could hear the garage door open and then close, which indicated to them that Mason had left the house to walk to his bus stop 2 minutes away. Neither of his parents physically saw or spoke to him face-to-face that morning. Soon after, Tracy got up to get ready and then left for work. Darren stayed home that day, hoping to get some yard work done outside. He also planned to take Mason out for driving practice when he got home from school. Mason's bus pulled up to the bus stop at 3:15 that afternoon, as it normally did, but Mason did not get off the bus with the other kids. By 3:30, when Mason still hadn't arrived home, Darren was starting to worry. He texted Tracy to let her know that Mason didn't get off the bus and that he still wasn't home. Soon after, Tracy got an email at her work email address letting her know that Mason hadn't shown up to school that day. Immediately, Tracy left work, quickly becoming frantic about her son's absence. When she arrived at home, the first place she wanted to check was Mason's bedroom. But when she turned the knob, she discovered that the door was locked, which was something that Mason never did. Tracy and Darren got Mason's door open, and they found that his bedroom looked completely normal. There was nothing out of place, and it also appeared that Mason hadn't taken anything extra with him, such as a backpack, clothes, or a sleeping bag. This was not the first time that Tracy and Darren had found their son's bedroom empty and their son nowhere to be seen. In December 2013, after having his Xbox confiscated, Mason was upset, and he packed a bag with clothes, a sleeping bag, and some food, and left the house late at night. It was the middle of winter in Canada, so ultimately, Mason knew that it was too cold for him to be out in the middle of the night, and he returned home after a few hours.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Though Darren was agnostic, Tracy was a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church, and she raised all six of their children to be active in the church as well. On some Tuesdays, Mason would go to his youth group meeting, so his parents called the church, but Mason hadn't shown up there either. Because Mason had run away before and returned home just a few hours later, Tracy and Darren made the decision to wait until his curfew, 10 p.m., to see if he would return home. But 10 o'clock came and went, and there was still no sign of Mason. Just after 10 p.m. on September 1st, 2015, Tracy and Darren called the St. George police and filed a missing juvenile report for their son. The next morning, September 2nd, Tracy went to Mason's school to pay for his graduation cap and gown, hoping she would see him there. But for the second day in a row, Mason never showed up to school. When Tracy returned home, she went back into Mason's bedroom to search for any possible clues as to where her son had gone. In his closet, she found his school supplies, such as notebooks and binders, hidden under some of his clothes. It appeared that Mason had no intention of going to school that morning when he left the house. And in the very back of his nightstand drawer, she found his wallet. His school ID and money were still there. Mason's phone and laptop were also left in his parents' bedroom, and there was no activity on his social media accounts after he disappeared. Upon talking with the bus driver who normally picked Mason up and dropped him off every day, his parents learned that neither the bus driver nor the other kids on the bus had seen Mason get on the bus that morning. Mason's trail was getting colder by the hour. Within a few days, the rest of the Smith children arrived in St. George to help search for their brother. Every day they walked the streets hanging flyers and asking anyone they could whether they had seen Mason. The LDS Church was also active in the search, helping the family however they could. Mason was difficult to miss. He was blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and he stood at 6 feet 4 inches tall. If someone had seen him that day, wandering the neighborhood or the surrounding desert, they would have remembered it. Within 3 days of Mason's disappearance, St. George police received 3 separate tips from people claiming they had spotted Mason. The most intriguing tip came from someone who had seen a teenage boy matching Mason's description, 5 miles from his home. The teenager was seen just off of Interstate 15, off an exit ramp, holding a sign that said, quote, "Need a ride to Vegas," end quote. There were further tips that came in, claiming that people had seen someone in Las Vegas who looked extremely similar to Mason. Darren did not waste a second, and he immediately made the 2-hour trip to Las Vegas to search for his son. When he arrived, he discovered that Red Rock Search and Rescue had learned about Mason's disappearance, and they had already begun their own searches in the area. Darren and the search and rescue team canvassed around the city and hung flyers, hoping to spot any sign of Mason. But they found nothing. It was later determined with surveillance footage from a nearby gas station that the teenage boy seen on the side of the interstate 5 miles away from Mason's home was not Mason. On September 7, 2015, 6 days after Mason's disappearance, Tracy decided to do another sweep through his bedroom. When she looked in his wallet again, she found something that she hadn't noticed before. A handwritten letter, 3 pages long, folded neatly into Mason's wallet. He had written the letter around 1:30 a.m. on September 1st, just hours before he disappeared, and just after his phone and laptop were confiscated by his dad. The details of the letter have never been publicly released, but according to Tracy, the letter that Mason had written and hidden was incredibly personal and painful for her to read. The letter led her to believe, and worry, that Mason was planning on harming himself. When police attempted to investigate Mason's electronic devices for clues as to his whereabouts, They discovered that Mason had erased most of his history on his laptop. His cell phone yielded no answers either. The only conversations police found in his text messages were with his mom, and maybe a friend or two. Within days of Mason's disappearance, another tip came in to the St. George Police Department. A woman was dropping her daughter off for dance lessons in Mason's neighborhood on September 1st around 3 p.m. when she saw Mason wandering the neighborhood walking in the opposite direction of his house. The woman knew Mason and his family from church, and she was adamant that it was Mason that she saw. Why would Mason still be aimlessly wandering his neighborhood more than 7 hours after he allegedly left his house that morning? The first large search conducted for Mason was organized by Red Rock Search and Rescue on September 26th and 27th, 2015. The search included nearly 100 people, consisting of teams on horseback, search dogs, and ATVs. In total, this two-day search covered between 30 to 40 miles, but no evidence turned up to lead to Mason's whereabouts. After 5 months with no signs of Mason, the lack of evidence or credible sightings led to rumors that Mason's parents might be hiding something. As a result, both Tracy and Darren voluntarily took polygraph tests, and they both passed with no issues. By April of 2016, 7 months after Mason disappeared, his 18th birthday loomed just around the corner. For months, Tracy had held on to the hope that Mason had simply been upset and was struggling with his parents' authority, and that he would reach out to her after he turned 18. On April 7th, 2016, Tracy hosted a birthday event for Mason, complete with cake and balloons and people singing happy birthday to him. But his 18th birthday came and went, and the call that Tracy had been hoping desperately for never came. In July 2016, nearly 1 year after Mason went missing, a new tip came in that offered renewed hope for both Mason's family and investigators. Two sisters were eating inside a Panda Express restaurant just outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, 4.5 hours from St. George, when they noticed a teenage boy looking at them from a table nearby. The teen soon approached the two sisters and asked if they had any spare change so that he could buy a bus ticket. They did give him some change, and he went on his way. Initially, the sisters had no idea that they may have just encountered a missing person. It wasn't until they told their mother about the interaction and described the teen to her that their mother thought she should show them Mason Smith's Facebook page. When they saw Mason's photos, they were convinced that the teenager at Panda Express was Mason Smith. The sisters noted that he was very polite and respectful when he approached them in the restaurant. Even more significant was their recollection of the teen's somewhat peculiar speech pattern. When Tracy learned about this tip from investigators, she immediately wanted to meet with the two sisters. Because Tracy had kept Mason's phone line active since he went missing, she was able to dial his number and hear his voicemail greeting, which she let the sisters listen to. When they heard the greeting, they agreed that the teen at Panda Express was Mason Smith. But confirming this encounter with 100% certainty turned out to be a challenge. The surveillance cameras at the restaurant had not been working that day, and there's nothing to indicate that any surveillance footage from surrounding businesses may have captured the teen. There was no way to know for certain whether or not the teenager asking for bus money at Panda Express was indeed Mason Smith. Along with the few sightings that offered the Smith family a glimmer of hope, there have been many sightings over the years that have been confirmed to be false, including several reported sightings in Las Vegas and even one at an anime convention in the area. There have never been any 100% confirmed sightings of Mason. In 2017, the St. George Police Department issued the first of several affidavits that indicated they were investigating Mason's disappearance as a potential homicide. One of these affidavits, dated June 21, 2017, stated, quote, "Throughout the investigation, there have been discrepancies between what Mason's parents, Tracy and Darren Smith, have told the St. George Police Department, Red Rock Search and Rescue, and the media. These discrepancies all point to the fact Tracy and Darren know more information surrounding Mason's disappearance than they have disclosed." End quote. One of the discrepancies investigators refer to is Darren Smith's recounting of the morning of September 1, 2015. Darren and Tracy told investigators that that morning, Darren woke up around 7 a.m. to knock on Mason's door. Darren and Tracy then heard Mason in the kitchen around 7:30 a.m. before hearing the garage door open and close around 7:40 a.m. as Mason left for school. Investigators discovered that Darren's gym card for Vesa Fitness, a gym just 10 minutes away from the Smith home, was swiped to enter the gym at 7:45 a.m. This led investigators to question the validity of Darren and Tracy's timeline. Other documents also indicated that sometime in early 2017, the St. George police were granted permission to place a GPS tracker on Darren Smith's truck. Investigators tracked Aaron's movements for 60 days, but found no evidence of any suspicious behavior. Darren and Tracy didn't learn about the GPS tracker until 2019. They have both said that they had no concerns about being checked out by investigators because they have nothing to hide. Authorities have never found any concrete evidence to support their theory that Darren and Tracy Smith were hiding something. In 2018, Darren and Tracy made the decision to get a divorce after 30 years of marriage. And in 2019, they organized their final search for Mason, and they have said that they needed to try to move on and find some peace among the devastation. Mason was shy and thoughtful, and he treated everyone with kindness and compassion. He was a gentle soul who had been struggling for a very long time, but he seemed to try his best to make it through each day in spite of that. If you are struggling with depression or thoughts of suicide, please reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or reach out to the Crisis Text Line by texting HELLO to 741-741. Both of these services are completely free and available 24/7. Please know that you are not alone. I have been there many times. I know how dark and lonely it can feel. Your soul shines so brightly and you deserve to be here. I care about you. Again, please reach out to someone if you are struggling. Mason Smith would now be 24 years old. He has blonde hair and blue eyes and is 6 feet 4 inches tall. At the time he disappeared, he weighed around 200 pounds. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Mason Smith on September 1st, 2015 in St. George, Utah, please call the St. George Police Department at 435-627-4300. All sources for this episode are listed in the show notes. Please be sure to leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you'd like to request a case for me to cover, there's a link in the show notes for the case request form. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at CrimeAgainPod, on Instagram at CrimeAgainPodcast, and on TikTok at CrimeAgainPodcast. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
July 4th member-only doorbuster deals are on at Lowe's. Right now, rewards members save $50 on a select Charbroil 4-burner gas grill, now just $149. Plus, save over $500 on a Whirlpool top-load laundry pair, now $886. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, these July 4th doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/7 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.